Hello, and welcome to Rover Talk. As usual, with me is Dan, Wagon Boy TD on Instagram and Bring a Trailer. Dan, how are you?
Good.
How's your day been going?
It's always long. Always long.
Anyhow, just remember that if you want to reach out to us, and we encourage you to do so, our email is rovertalk55@gmail.com. Reach out, tell us about anything and everything, criticize us, say you like whatever it is. Today, this week, we got a cool email from Kyle, who has a couple of rovers himself and brought up some points about our disco episode, which is pretty cool, and encouraged us to touch on P-38s, Dan.
That's all right. I'm game. I'll just give my input.
Anyway, so today's episode is the series truck, one of our favorites, and we're going to do a little bit of a different spin on this episode, how we look at series trucks, and we're going to look at this a little bit more from the perspective of the type of use that you're going to give to these wonderful and versatile vehicles. So that's going to be, we want to do a different take on this, and we're going to share a little bit of our experience with these, which is ample, and hopefully you like what you hear.
So I kind of wanted to just kind of update you, Ivan, about things that I've been working on and kind of share with everyone. You know, every day I'm doing something on one of my rovers, and, you know, recently I've been working on my two-door Range Rover, which, as you might remember, has the VM turbo diesel. Anyways, we had finished up all the suspension, and once that was done, I needed a new alternator, so it seems. And so some of you might, feel the same way and realize that, like, if you taking the time to remove the alternator, you might as well, like, touch a couple other things, while you're in there. And I replaced some hoses and then realized, you know what, I'm gonna tackle the water pump. So this week I kind of, since I'm in there kind of attitude, I'm gonna go ahead and replace some very key things. And as you know, anything having to do with the cooling system on a diesel is probably the most important. So that's kind of what I've been working on this
week. Dan, I couldn't agree with you more, and I think you're doing the right thing. And since you're there, the other thing I wanted to mention that I know is that you had the alternator rebuilt. That's pretty cool, because a lot of these parts, the new part won't fit all exactly like the old one does.
No.
And
because the bracket lineup is,
yeah,
is, it's, as we know, down to, like, the smallest amount.
Yeah.
So
it's pretty cool that you can do that. And there's a lot of guys out there, and I know they're less and less, but there's a lot of guys out there that'll rebuild it for pretty cheap.
Yeah, we're lucky to be in Chicago, where, you know, we have a couple of people that just strictly deal in starters and alternators, and we'd be more than happy to share that if you're in Chicago.
Yes, please reach out. We usually know where to get things done, or who can do them at very reasonable prices.
Because, right? I am a cheap son of a bitch. You got to be with Land Rovers.
Well, I think classic Land Rovers don't have that high of an entry cost, honestly, in comparison to, like, modern cars and stuff like that.
But 100%.
Anyway, so, Dan, the series truck.
So the reason kind of why we wanted to talk about the series is because I think for both of us, it's, and a lot of us out there, it's really our introduction into the brand and what we, kind of identify as probably the most iconic 4x4, that's out there that a lot of us are familiar with. I know I'll probably get some flack from, Jeep owners, but, we're talking Land Rovers. And for me, just a quick story of how I was introduced to Land Rovers series. I was probably about 7 or 8, and I think some people that are my age will remember the show Emergency, which is about these two paramedics, and my favorite character, John, who was a paramedic, drove a series truck, which really stood out to me as a kid, as I'd never seen, that type of truck before. I thought it was really cool that this, you know, fireman character on television was driving one. And ever since then, I've kind of been obsessed with that sort of, you know, the look, which is iconic, and that being the series truck.
That's pretty cool. I had a different experience because I always used to see them in the Spanish countryside. I lived in Spain from the age of, well, I was born in Spain, but I lived in Spain from the age of 13 until I was about 26 or 27. And I remember that every time you used to travel, living in Madrid, you know, you would travel to different parts of Spain. I would see them in the countryside, and I just thought they were really cool, really rugged. It was just something really cool. And I bought my first one. Actually, I didn't buy it. My father did. My father doesn't like cars, so he doesn't really give a crap. But he's always up for an adventure, so and he loves to travel Spain. So I found one through an online website. And it was in the outskirts of the city in Bilbao, in the north of Spain, Basque country. And so I sent him up there, and the owner was a really, really nice guy. And it was a 64 Series 2A, so that meant recessed headlights and a non-synchronized gearbox. Now, I didn't find this out until the car got here to Chicago. So I had it shipped, and believe it or not, I got it in the middle of the winter on a very sunny day, strangely enough. And it must have been, I don't know, like 2 degrees. I mean, I was literally freezing my ass off.
Were you even able to
it
put
started.
It in gear? But it started.
It started, and it went into gear.
Really?
It went to gear. Yes. And then I kind of realized
that. Was it fussy?
I mean, it needed a little bit of charging the battery, but I put that to the fact that I had spent 3 weeks on a boat plus another week at the Port of Baltimore until I got it out. Yeah. So it was probably, and that was actually my first experience owning, and I loved it. And I drove it one time because it needed, of course, immediately after I parked it, I realized that it had, I think I could count 8 leaks.
Of course. Eight, that's it?
8. And so what I did was At that point, I wasn't really sure what shop to take it to. So there's a shop down in the south of Chicago in Beverly. And they're actually really good. They do a lot of work. But, of course, I had to drive it from the north of Chicago to the south of Chicago. Now, we're going to get into the fact that they're not highway vehicles. So, obviously, I had to use the street.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the neighborhoods, you know, there's a street in Chicago called Western Avenue. It's probably one of the longest ones in Chicago, if not the longest street, right?
It's one of the longest streets in the country, actually.
Okay. All right. Well, see, Dan knows a lot more about
so
Chicago.
So that's like you literally can get straight down to Beverly from anywhere in the north.
Exactly. And so, and it's kind of cool because you see the neighborhoods changing. So you see, you know, they're kind of ethnic, right? And God, everybody loved it. I mean, I had people. I think I had a guy follow me for about 10 blocks. He was just looking at the car, and every time he'd stop at a stop sign, he'd look at me and like give me thumbs up, you know. And it was a diesel. It was, and it's just after that hour and I'd say about hour and 50 minutes, it took me to go like 20 miles.
Yeah,
I realized how much I loved that car and how cool it was, and how much I enjoyed just. Going through the gears and grabbing momentum.
It makes you happy.
Yeah, and all that noise, obviously, and needless to say, no radio of any kind. It was just, you know, me and my gears.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my first experience. And ever since then, I love them.
Yeah.
It's probably my favorite.
It still is definitely my favorite, just mainly because I've had it for a gazillion years. And I've done everything on the truck. And, you know, your first Rover is, you know, usually going to be always your favorite, so.
For sure.
I absolutely love it.
By the way, mine was really nice because when I got it and it was really cold in the winter, mine didn't have a heater, but at least the rear windows on the back didn't open, so it was an old Safari top with no open windows.
Oh, okay.
So all you could open was half of the driver window or half of the passenger window, which actually kept me kind of warm on the way, as well as the heat from the engine, which obviously with a bulkhead being one piece of metal only.
Yep.
Between the engine and you. So it's actually kind of nice. I think that my experience in the summer would have been a little bit different. I probably would have been
sweating a little.
Had to open the doors in the middle of it. Anyway. So Dan, give us a little bit about the differences between, when we refer to series trucks, we refer to series, there's series one, series two, 2A, which are almost the same. Series 3, which is probably the most known or popular. And then for Santana built, there's what we would call a Series 4.
Yeah, so basically you're looking at a span from, 48 to 85. And then post-85, we all know, are in the 90s and the 110. So it's a long stretch. The first series basically ran for, a short amount of time, 10 years. 48 and 50 are probably, if we're talking that first series, that first 2 years are probably my favorite, design-wise, because the... So if you ever see a Rover at a show or, friend drives up or whatever, and their headlights are both behind the grill in the inner portion of the front, then it's instantly, it's ridiculously rare, but it's the first 2 years where they put the lights completely behind the grill.
By the way, if anybody sees one of those for sale and doesn't want to buy it, send us the link, because I'll buy it and bring it back to life.
Yeah.
And so will Dan. Dan will do it with me.
Well... Yeah,
sorry to interrupt you.
Finding, especially that.
Right or left-hand drive, we'll take anything, doesn't matter.
Yeah, in the States would be, pretty rare. And in the very first few years, it had, the little rinky-dink 1.6 liter engine. Not much power, but you have to remember that the whole idea of this truck, through the whole run of its life, I would say, It literally is a tractor, it's a Cub Cadet on wheels with a great design, So it's from a 1.6 to the 2.25 or even to the 2.6, in the big picture of it, you're really not going to notice a huge difference on, the capability, except for, maybe in later and you had overdrive, but for the most part, don't you think it's
none. No difference. They're all slow. They're not going to be a fast car. It's not a car that you're going to use to get anywhere quickly. That's just the way it wasn't designed for that. In fact, probably a lot of our listeners already know, but it's designed so you could connect a series of different types of farm equipment to the front of the vehicle or to the back. In fact, the cross members have holes in them so you could get out another shaft and power, a plow or some type of, more about farming. I don't know shit about farming, Dan.
Well, just because I have one doesn't mean that, I know. But I do know that having that vehicle down there is incredible. The kind of stuff that I'm able to, to do down there, having this vehicle that, A, looks, pretty awesome, but has the capability of essentially just being, a workhorse.
By the way, if you want to see Dan's Series Rover, log in. Check out his Instagram, which is his handle is WagonBoyTD. He's got a lot of cool pictures of the Series 3 down at the farm.
And
Rovers.
I had just spent this weekend, on the trail and working it, on the farm.
See, me on the other hand, I've never actually taken a Series truck off road. I've always had them in the city.
I
have one. That's not necessarily true. Let me rephrase that. So I haven't when I've owned it, but I've driven some that I bought in the middle of the country. And so, of course, to try them out, of course, I put in the four-wheel.
I keep telling you to come down and, you can go on my trail. So having said that and having Series both in Chicago, I've had a series, not to jump past the... Let's just go over the Series 2 real quick.
Yeah.
So the Series 2 ran from 58 to just under 69, I believe, and then the transition into 2A from 1970, because I had a 1970
2A. So Dan, you're right. And that's correct for what's manufactured at Solihull in the UK. The years for the Series 2A and Series Series 2 and 2A, for example, for Santana was a little bit different. So Santana's were made, Series 2A was made all the way up till 1975. In fact, I have on the boat right now one of the last Series 2As ever made from Santana in Spain, because it's actually titled in the first week of 76. So it appears on paperwork as a 76 model year car. Of course, in Spain, imagine like Christmas holiday, nobody does shit. So December's like a useless month. So if you buy a car in December, you got a January registration, right?
Right.
Anyway, more back in the 70s. And so they, the Series 2 was started in Spain in the late 50s. And I need to check this date, but I think it was 58 when they started the complete knockdown kits from the UK. But the lines were blurry because, of course, they didn't have, you know, since they were still knockdown kits basically up until about 73, 74, and even 75, which were basically the same, they had less availability, and so there was they couldn't track demand as well, so they had overlap on some. So in fact, you have 75 model year Series 3s and 74 Series 3s, and you also have 74, 75 Series 2As from the Santana Rovers. But anyway, yes, keep.
So,
by the way, there's going to be an episode specifically on Santana Rovers,
right?
Coming.
Yeah, which I think would be good, just because that's always the question. Like, what's the huge difference between a Santana and an actual Series?
I have a ton of information on that, too.
I'm sure you do. So, where were we at? So, we're
2A, 3?
2. So, let me just kind of talk about some of the details of aesthetically, you know, when you're looking at series, although it's kind of confusing with my Series 3 because I kind of Frankensteined it a little bit. But there was a period right at the latter half of the 2As and the 3s where your lights jump from your...
We should probably say that Series 1 had more rounded front fenders.
Right.
Series 2A, they were boxier.
Yep.
Series 2 and 2A. Series 2 had the recessed headlights that were on the inside of the fenders and not on the outside.
Correct.
This lasted up until 69, 70,
yeah,
or 67.
There's a couple of 2As and a couple of 3s where there's like that blurry lines of like,
yeah,
where they were doing...
So in Series 2A had both headlights on the outside of the on the outside of the fenders and recessed headlights, and then as Dan was saying, there were a few that actually had four headlights, right?
Well, no, they didn't have four, but they, like in that same series, they had the lights on the wings,
mm-hmm,
and or on the inners.
Yeah.
So, but not like both, like mine and mine.
Well, actually, some Santanas did, because they had an overrun of parts
and mine I just did just because I didn't want fogs. I just wanted more lighting because it's complete,
you know,
darkness out in the country.
I passed up on the cheapest Series 2A with both sets of original factory headlights
and
recessed and outside.
And we all know that Lucas headlamps give about, I don't know, like 9 volts worth of...
Yeah, well, you know, a lighter's worth of light.
Exactly.
A lighter's worth of light. Anyways, yeah.
Exactly. And then a couple other details that people love, love, love. You'll always hear this in forums and auction sites and everything. It's just like, you know, the dash has to be metal instead of like a Series 3, whereas we know it's kind of like... I kind of equate like the Series 3 to like when the Range Rover 95 went to like a padded dash. It was just really for safety and, you know, mainly for safety is when the Series 3 went to like a padded dash, although I could still crack my skull open on that padded dash.
Yeah, that's padded, yeah.
But the beauty of the 2A, which one of the things I liked, and I know everybody out there just loves, is that the, you know, your cluster is right in front of the stick. It's in the center. It's not in front of you like on the Series 3. So your speedometer and your gauge, there's two gauges. They're in the center of your dash, and then between the clusters, you know, is where... the ignition is.
Your ignition key, yeah.
And a lot of, you know, a lot of people love that. I love that in my series.
That's why I love 2A. The series 2A.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially if it's in, you know, green, if it's in a great color, just everything just looks incredibly, you know, beautiful,
yeah,
aesthetically. But I'm not a collector, and I'm not a hoarder, but my vehicles have to, they serve a purpose in my life, and I use them, as you can see on my Instagram. I use every single vehicle. I don't run like show queens. I don't have the money to like store, you know, queens. And so I had my 2A in Chicago. It was completely just absolutely mint. I mean, it was gorgeous. And it got to a point, if you live in Chicago and you drive your classics in Chicago, there's a reason why you don't see that many classics out, is because it can be kind of terrifying.
Well, you know, yeah. Well, let's get into that. So the other thing I wanted to mention about the series is that there's several body variations throughout the years. So basically from Series 2, which is Series 2, 2A, and 3, you had the 88, which is the short wheelbase,
yep,
the 109, which is the long wheelbase. Both of these models came in standard cab and pickup. And then both of that, and then the long wheelbase, the 109, came in either four doors or two doors, which is the one that I have. My Series 2A that's coming is a two door.
Okay.
And so there are lots of different variations. The tops could be safari tops with holes in the top, where you holes in the top.
It just slides back, yeah, and then the air just comes through the.
But, you know, there's lots of, you know, and you can get canvas tops for basically everything. You can get a bikini top, or you can get a regular canvas top. There's a bit of everything that you can get for those. Anyway, so we wanted to take a different approach than just, you know, describing the different models. And the approach is more, we wanted to touch a little bit, yeah, a little bit based on, so you might hear a little bit of background noise here, and I'm sorry about this, but we're having a storm in the middle of
Chicago.
Basically
a tornado right now.
So we're here in a very tight and covered space, and we can now hear it. So we apologize for that. I'll try to filter it out.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to be possible. Anyway, so here's the thing. The thing about Rovers is that you can use them in a variety. Series trucks can be used in a variety of different capacities and different lifestyles. So I want Dan to talk. Dan's going to talk a little bit more about the off-road, because that's primarily what he uses his for. And then I'm going to touch a little bit on the city use.
Okay. So when looking at possibly purchasing a series and you're a first-timer, obviously you gravitated towards it because you love the look. You love everything about the Land Rover, but you really haven't had, you know, much experience and expectations of what comes with actually driving one. Ivan will talk about the city. I'll talk about the country driving. For me, I live the country is like way out in the middle of nowhere. The nearest town is like 4 miles away. So for me, having a series truck at a farm is ideal because, A, you literally shouldn't be driving any series trucks on, for example, the Dan Ryan in Chicago. You know, yes, they can go, you know, 50, 55, and if you have overdrive, you can expect a little bit more out of that. But in reality, when push comes to shove, you know, you're mostly going to either be doing gentleman trails or maybe, you know, driving, you know, into town to, you know, to pick up your liquor for the weekend or something, you know.
Yeah.
Or for me, you know, I haul crap around my farm, whether it be, you know, logs or, you know, what have you. And I have a awesome winch on the front. So, as I mentioned before, it really is just a glorified, really cool looking kind of truck.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. So here's the thing about, and I want to get in a little bit more into the city use. So I've had.
And I'll chime in because had my 2A for quite a while in the city.
So here's the first thing that we all need to understand. And Dan and I always chuckle a little bit when we see one of these for sale in an auction website, especially when I bring a trailer, and somebody asks, can you use it on the highway? I mean, don't get me wrong. You could use a 50 cubic centimeter moped on the highway. You'd probably be dead in Chicago by the first, mile and a half.
Yeah.
They weren't meant for that. That's not supposed to happen, not even with overdrive. Now, can you if you needed to? Yes, you could. Yep. But you don't expect to be going much faster than about 60, 65 at the very most in downhill. They're not meant for that, and people need to understand that. The second thing you need to understand is that most Series 3 have a little bit more like padding inside, but Series 2A are basically metal on metal. So it's
100%.
It's a noisy experience, which is part of the charm. And Series 2A, you can't move the seats. You just adjust your body position to the pedals.
Yep.
And I'm 6'1", and I'm a little crunched. I just get used to it because I drive a bunch of different cars, so I almost never move people's seats. I just adjust my position so that I can see out of the mirrors and that. But it is a...
It's more comfortable than your little tiny MG, though, right?
I don't know.
Well, there's different. It's a different seating position.
Here's the thing. The MG has a little bit more of a bucket seat feel. Well, and, and then the Rover, you're like moving. You know, if you don't... You
could slide right across.
Anyway, part of the charm is the mechanical nature of what the vehicle is. And is it usable in a city like Chicago? Yes. My answer is always yes.
100%.
Now, that is climate conditions apart, or if you're going to use yours year-round, the heating is very bad in these cars, so you're going to have to wear a thick winter coat, and you have to have it undercoated or protected because there's going to be salt on the roads, which is the reason why you don't see a lot of them in Chicago year-round.
Yeah.
But you have to understand that driving an old car, and this happens with many old cars, even with my MGs, it's a question of momentum. So it's momentum driving. You just adjust the way that you drive so you can keep up with traffic. Are you going to be the first one out of the stoplight? No. But is it going to be an issue? No. You just get used to it. You learn how to move the gears and play with the engine revs so that you don't over rev, but you maintain a rhythm that allows you to move around in the city.
But that's that. Right, that statement right there, essentially, if you are concerned about getting off the gate, like, then frankly, you shouldn't.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean? You have to, like.
That's the equivalent of asking if you can drive on the highway.
Exactly. Like, you don't buy a Rover because, It's a Ram 3500, you know what I mean? Like you buy it because you're essentially in love with it, yeah, and it makes you happy driving down Damon Avenue and someone waves at you, you know.
And the other thing that a lot of people don't know is that they are even the short wheelbase models are 7-seaters. So
yep,
it's 3 in the front and 4 in the back. And you can get seatbelts. You can buy seatbelts, or you can get them at your lots of local shops. We know a couple of shops here in Chicago that will do that for you. They'll put in seatbelts in the back. So if you're worried, you're concerned about that, or you have little kids. By the way, my daughter loves.
Well, you can't get her out of that thing.
She loves it. She wanted when I got it, she literally wanted to just like do her schoolwork inside of the backseat of the car. Anyway, they're very cool cars to use, and especially when it's nice outside where you can take the top off, you can put a canvas top, you can put a bikini top or a full canvas top on, and they're great to run around the city in.
Yeah.
And so I always, when people tell me, is it a car for a city? Absolutely. I use mine in the city of Chicago all the time.
And I think having a right-hand drive in the city is, like, it's brilliant because of the fact that, like, Chicago, unlike probably, Portland or New York, were really, really heavy bike cities. Everywhere in Chicago, there's like a bike lane, like no matter what street you're on. I always loved the fact that I could just pull up to the curb, get out, and, have no problem. And there's no sight line, there's no blind spots you know, most rovers. So then just getting back out, you know, into traffic is, you know,
yeah,
not a big deal.
So the only thing is, you know, we talked about, I mean, what the other thing I wanted to kind of look at, other than like the type of, you know, the type of scenario or environment that you're going to use it in, is kind of like, you know, do you do modifications? Do you not do modifications? As far as for the city, honestly, you can very much use a stock rover. Overdrive does make it a little bit more convenient, just because what happens is when you're in fourth gear, you click in the overdrive and it reduces the revs by about 500 to 600 revs. And that kind of reduces the, not so much the tension on the engine, which it does as well, but a little bit the noise, and it makes it a little bit more comfortable, and a little bit more comfortable for your, you know, your pedal movement, so you don't have to be on the gas as, but, you know, if you don't have it, that's also fine, you know? It's perfectly usable as is, and honestly, you know, you can, you're, the other thing that, for the city is that, you know, the tire choice is kind of irrelevant. It, you kind of do what you think looks best, yeah, right? So it's, yeah, kind of more of an aesthetic thing than it is an actual use thing, because, I mean, the ride isn't soft on any of these. These are all factory leaf spring cars, so they're bouncy as is.
Yep.
So, I mean, if you're going to go for the big, big, thick tires, the only thing you have to keep in mind is if you're going to put really, really much bigger tires and you're even going to include a lift, you got to remember the gearing on the axle isn't going to correspond, so you're going to be putting a little bit more stress on the rear axle, which is something that I want Dan to talk about in terms of the Salisbury axle. But what do you recommend for the off-road user?
In regards to what?
Modification? No, well, modification?
Not in the series. There's like nothing. Like I didn't do anything to, you know, to mine, which is an 88. Wheelbase. There isn't, like, I didn't do, you know, special shocks. You know, it all, you know, comes with leaves. Like, there wasn't anything that I had done that I thought would improve my off-roading. You know, it's not like, yeah, it's not like my farm is like Moab, but, like, I mean, I do, it's, you know, it's technically, you know, off-road. So there isn't that much, you know, stress, you know, that I put on it. You know, I go through a river, you know, big deal. Like, there's really not,
yeah,
I'm not rock climbing, you know, rock crawling, mm-hmm, with my series.
There are, however, many upgrades that you can do. You can convert them to spring coil suspension. You can put on disc brakes. There's lots of stuff that you can do, and a lot of people, and a lot of, you're going to see a lot of custom builds that include a lot of modifications.
I think where that really kind of comes into play, and I could be wrong, is I think people that modify like series trucks, it may, I don't know if it's like they're only like true off-roader, because then to me it's like why mess with what it is to be an off-roader. You know, that's why, you know, a disco or people have like Defenders and stuff. Like, to me, like, it's more than capable of, you know, going off-road. I mean,
as is from the factory. Yeah. Yeah, with factory, I mean, spec parts. Yeah. No, I mean,
because otherwise then you're just doing it for the series look's sake. And, you know.
True, you know, and it could very well be just an aesthetic thing. I can see that too. Anyway, the other thing that you got to keep in mind is that these things are not waterproof, or I would say not water resistant. So, if you drive yours around and it rains on you,
well, be
prepared for everything inside to get wet. You don't leave anything valuable in there, because anybody can get into them in and out very easily. And
I could steal one in under probably 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very, like, yeah. And then it would take you another 5 minutes to get it parked out of where it is. Oh, yeah. Parallel parking. That's the only challenge. So if you are a guy or gal, which we would love to have anybody comment on this. And if you're a guy or gal that has to parallel park one of these, you know, I hope you're strong.
Do you think?
I hope you're strong.
They don't have power steering, do they?
There is no... Actually, the Series 4 Santanas, which is from 1984 forward, do have a type of power-assisted steering and a gearbox that has a fifth gear. But we'll cover that in the Santana episode. Anyway, parallel parking, challenging, to say the least.
I mean, it just takes a little bit, you know,
but if you're patient.
Because, you know, as we know, or maybe some may not know, but... Series trucks never came in automatic, so
yes,
you know, you have to be pretty fluid, either left or right hand, you know, shifting, and
you have to have strength in your arms to turn that wheel when you're at a standstill. It's not any different than driving a 50s pickup truck,
especially
in original spec.
Especially if you're going with, you know, beefier tires.
Yeah, exactly.
Pain in the ass.
But that's a little price to pay. The good thing about it too is that you, if you got space, you can just bump it onto the curb and then bump it back off, and it's just like at home. Anyway, that's just a little stupid detail. I love a series truck for the city use. I think it's really cool, and especially in the summer when it's nice. I think it's just a cool way to get around town and run your errands.
I just don't think if your expectation was, let's say for example, you lived in Naperville and you wanted to come.
Naperville's a suburb of Chicago for our international.
If you lived out in the suburbs, you know, it's not something that, unless you gave yourself extra time to take, you know, B roads.
Yeah.
You know, or side streets.
And by the way, anybody that uses a series truck daily or semi-daily, reach out to us. We want to hear your story.
Huge props to being able to do that. Like I tried that a couple summers ago, and I was exhausted.
I know. I
just exhausting.
Yeah.
Especially in Chicago, because it's a constant stop and go, you know, certain times.
Anyway, reach out to us if you do it. RoverTalk55@gmail.com or at our Wagon Boy TD handle on Instagram and SRI2405 handle, which is mine on Instagram. Just reach out to us. We want to hear your story. And hopefully sometime soon we'll be able to give you a call and you can come in live with us on the podcast and tell us about your daily experience, which is we always like to hear that from anywhere in the world, which we have listeners from all the continents right now, except for Antarctica. I don't know.
Which you would think would be awesome to have a...
I know, it would, wouldn't it?
A rover up.
Anyway, so that's, you know, we wanted to... The last part of this, so Dan told me yesterday... So the other side of this is, like, there's, like, a mixed-use type of use for a series truck, and a lot of that involves the resto mod, right?
Yeah.
Or the modified.
Yeah, the modified, resto modified, you know, any of that sort of like extreme to the next.
Yeah, so a lot of times the modification will be done for extreme off-roading, you know, like super chunky tires, cut out the more space and for the wheels, really big lifts, roll cages, you know, different, and then of course the big thing, which is putting in a different engine.
Yes.
Now, like Dan said, there's a part of me that's like, why would you touch something that, I mean, if you really wanted to do that, do it in another vehicle, which is meant for that.
But then you're like, I still applaud them because, you know, if they can, why not? You know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
Although they did it to a very early series, we're about to kind of talk about this one that just popped up on.
Yeah, so we thought, let me get into that. So we thought we'd use this as an example. Dan texted me 2 days ago, and he said, check out this rover on Bring a Trailer. Now, I was going to pull it up here on my computer. It's a 1960, which would technically be a Series 2.
Yep.
Short wheelbase, 88. And it has it's a Vortec
V8. So it's a Vortec V8 out of a 2002 Chevy truck, I believe.
Okay. And they used a 4-speed manual.
So, and they used, I believe, axles from a D1. Like they, when we talk about like Frankensteining a rover, I mean, it's essentially taking everything that was series out of it, and then except for, you know, the shell, and then putting everything, you know, different back into it.
Yeah. No, I mean, yes. So, Dan, what do you think about this car?
The only thing I think about is I would love, love, love a to have seen a driving video, which I think that he just posted recently, but I would love to drive it, mainly because I would want to see how the engine responds to it being on this chassis in this box. You know, it's a lot of power for, you know, this Reynolds tinfoil type aluminum box. Thank God it has disc brakes all around because, you know,
yeah.
Most of us are used to, you know, the double drum where we're, you know, we're mentally already thinking ahead of the braking, you know, system when
yes.
it comes to those. So, you know, I love anybody that is creative, you know, steps out, thinks outside the box. You know, would I want to maybe own it? You know, probably not. Would I want to take it for a fun ride? 100%. You know, I would want to see, you know, what a Vortec is in there. And I know everybody says, oh, they've been putting V8s in Rovers forever. And I'm like, well, it's a little bit different when you're putting in kind of a new millennium kind of V8. And my grandpa's V8 that, you know.
Yeah, no. There's definitely a difference. So I, you know, if you want to check it out, it's live actually now.
Yeah, it's got like 5 days left, I think.
Got like 5 days left. Today is November 10th.
Got
so
a great stance, great color.
Yeah. You know, I'm hesitant to criticize it, okay? Because I, you know, for one thing, I've never been a big fan of the resto mod and especially the custom car look. But without being a fan, I do appreciate the craftsmanship that goes into some of these builds.
100%.
And so it doesn't matter that I don't like it aesthetically or that's something I wouldn't do it, but I appreciate very much the skill level and the thought process. And, you know, different people, you know, like everything, different people build their cars to their spec, to
and
what they want.
It actually what keeps this industry alive. So,
you know, we always encourage that. In fact, I met with Dan Marcello from Brooklyn Coachworks this summer in Brooklyn, New York, in his shop. Really nice guy. You know, check out his magazine. I can't remember the name of it. Was it Iron and what was it called? Well, anyway, Dan Marcello, Brooklyn Coachworks. They built some really cool stuff there. And you know, looking at his builds, I think they
well,
do
it's more heritage. Like I would consider it more heritage.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I wanted to get to. I think it's a different style of what you would call a resto mod. But anyway, the one that's on Bring a Trailer right now is from the username Rescue Me. Look them up and look up the car if you get the chance because it's just kind of a cool build. I've always wanted to do that, to be honest with you. I've always wanted to put a modern engine in a series truck just to kind of get a feel for what it is without touching a whole lot of, you know, the exterior or anything else. I'm hesitant to criticize this but I'm going to do it and this is very constructive. I think this car this truck needs another $2,000 put into it. And the Vortec is a good choice like any other V8 and the gearbox and the transfer case and the axles, of course, are all good upgrades. But the leaf springs look to be original and kind of rusty. Some of the cross metal bars that buckle both sides of the body together are kind of rusted. There seems to be some rust in the bed, which is something that, you know, can kind of easily be repaired. You can put in a new bed for not a whole lot of money. Mm-hmm. And I think that some of those little details could really have made this truck maybe 5 to 10 more than what it will end up at on Bring a Trailer website, and just giving it that little extra like push to be really
and
cool.
I'm more of like the optimist, whereas like knowing Rovers like we do, we're always putting our touch, even if there's brand new tires, I'm gonna swap the tires. So for a Rover like that, when most of like the mechanicals are done, I look at it like, well, you know what? Hey, maybe I didn't like that desert tan. here's my opportunity to go in, change the color, fix some stuff.
True.
You know, and maybe get a better price. Because if it was completely fully restored, maybe I'm going to, you know, have to end up pay more. And, you know, we just kind of notice those things because, you know, we're constantly every single day looking at, you know, Land Rovers.
And the other thing, too, is that, believe it or not, even though the paints are single stage on those, if you have a skilled person that can buff it out, they are really going to get some really cool patina shine out of it.
But you better find someone that is brilliant with aluminum because, A, it's not easy to work with, and you can make beautiful patina, like on mine, that came naturally, or it can go south pretty quick with aluminum.
Yes, but that's usually going to cost you under $500, and it just gives the look to the truck. But anyway, I hope that car brings in a lot of money. I appreciate the craftsmanship behind it. I think it's a really cool build, regardless of these little details. I mean, it's just kind of my own opinion and nitpicking at it.
It's refreshing. It's like, to me, it's just refreshing to see something, you know, new that I don't see every single day.
Yeah, very, very cool. And I also kind of like that bikini top. That bikini top available at Exmoor and different suppliers is gives it just a different look.
Yep.
And so that, I think that, but I mean, it's a very cool car. It looks like it's, you know, the mechanicals are very well done and sorted. I'll have to see. I think that video was posted. I want to check it out because I think that's going to be really cool to see how it drives.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. He just posted it not that long ago.
And what I'm especially glad about is that they didn't put in an automatic transmission. Because I think that takes away from the series truck. The series truck is just a manual. It's part of the joy and the driving experience that goes into it. Anyway, that's kind of we wanted to touch a little bit on what we've seen around in the market lately. My series 2A109 is going to go up for sale. I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. Due to coronavirus, I've had to buy this car sight unseen. So I'm taking more of the previous owner's word for what it is. So I guess we will see in the first week of December.
I'll let you know.
I think, Dan, by the way, I'm going to need your help that day because I got a lot of cars coming at the same time.
Not a problem. We'll be on lockdown.
It's going to be a spoiler. All right. So I've got a 1988 Range Rover 4-door 3.5 fuel injected with a manual 5-speed factory.
Highly desired by Americans.
A 1990 4-door 3.9 manual from the factory.
So an upgrade to the 3.9.
Yes, to the 3.5. A rare bird, which is an 86. So not yet. 86 4-door in silver. 2.4 liter turbo diesel with a manual and factory air conditioning. And of course my 109 series 2A. So
a lot coming in.
That is. I'm sure you'll see some of these come up for sale and I'll show them on Instagram and in different places. Anyway, you know, series trucks are truly like very cool cars, and I have yet to know somebody that hasn't driven one and just kind of like fallen in love with the experience. I introduced two people to series trucks with my last one, which was a 73 Series 2A from Spain that only had 45,000 original kilometers and was as immaculate as you can get one in original non-restored condition, except for a repaint. And I always encourage everybody to drive these cars and enjoy them. Dan, it's a pleasure to have you do this with me again.
Always.
We're going to have a new episode coming up, and we're split on the topics. But remember, please reach out to us. Tell us what you think about this episode or any of the other ones. RoverTalk55@gmail.com, or reach out to us through Instagram, WagonBoyTD and SRI2405. Thank you for listening, and thank you for listening from all the different continents and countries that have started to download our podcast. We're available on Spotify, Simplecast, Apple Podcasts, and basically anywhere. Just go to our website. Go to the same website where you got this, and hopefully you'll be listening to us soon. Thank you.
All right, guys.